Everybody, welcome to another Retro Game Night. I am Damian DiCarlo. I am super, super excited to announce what we're doing today. But first, it is the beautiful, beautiful faces here of my other co-hosts. I have Mr. Losi. How are you, sir?
Wonderful, Damian. Like you said, very excited.
And how about you, Mr. Player 2? Earl Lawrence is with us as well. Hi.
Hello. Doing great. How are you?
I am excited. Happy.
I know.
Plenty to talk about. This episode is going to be a big deal, and the reason why it's a big deal, this is something that has impacted the gaming industry hugely as we know it. We're going to be looking back at Super Mario Brothers 3, and I'm really happy that we decided to do this. After, I think, Losi, you brought up Mario Brothers Wonder, and that got me thinking, you know, what's, you know, there's some staple Mario games, but I think that there's none that can hold a torch truly to Super Mario 3, although I'm more partial to Super Mario Brothers, you know, or Super Mario World, but you couldn't have that without Super Mario Brothers 3. So that's
right.
That's pretty big.
Huge.
Super Mario Brothers 3 was the classic platform game. It came out for Nintendo, the NES, the OG, and back in 1988 in Japan, 1990 in North America, and 91 in Europe. It sold over 17 million copies worldwide, making it the third best-selling NES game of all time. It was later remade when it came to the package of the Super Mario All-Stars in 93 for Super Nintendo. It was put on Game Boy Advance. It got upped in graphics yet again with Super Mario Advance 4, which was back in 2003. And it's been on, you know, countless ports, you know, Switch, the Wii U. I mean, it's endless. I believe even the DS had it. I mean, everywhere you can think of, it's been on. So really want to dive into history. What are some of our memories? I always like to go first with memories, because I think that's a really good send off with going into now then other facts about the game. I think right now that the main priority is nostalgia. So
yeah,
what do we think about memories here? Earl, what do you have?
Yeah, this one, we were talking briefly when we were discussing the episode, and when we had announced Super Mario Brothers 3, yeah, it's super nostalgic in a sense where you would go through the stages, and I think I remember the hype of hearing this game come out and wanting to just play it, you know, and get through the stages and to just see what all the new super power-ups are. And there were so many different things that were not the same as Super Mario's 1 and 2, right? So if we do Super Mario's 1 and 2 from the US, you know, Super Mario's 3, totally different, new adventure. You know, you had the fact that Mario could fly and put his, you know, the raccoon suit and the leaves, and there's other these mini games in it. But I remember, you know, plugging in and playing this game for hours and just have that feel like you just want to get through the game. It's really cool there, the way that he designed the set, like Losi's background that he has. It's kind of like, you know, it's a whole new set design. Everything looks great. I love the fact that they still kept it in the 2D scrolling, because there were talks about having it a different angle. But overall, this game has some really good memories, and this is one of the Super Mario Brothers that just stands out like always. And, you know, Damian, your background has, you know, the cover of the game, and you could just see it. It's as simple as it is. You're like, Mario can fly.
Yeah, you know? That's a huge deal that he can fly. I remember that was the most talked about when I was a kid. I was in grade school. I used to be a kid, believe it or not. No, but I used to talk about it with kids in school, and it was always so cool that he could fly. Mm-hmm. I can't think of another video game at the time that, I'm sure there were other games you could fly technically, but this was just so cool. I remember, like, you could do that in Kirby sort of, but this was Mario. It was Mario, and he could take off, and it was a raccoon suit. I mean, they could have slapped any animal on Mario and it would have been marketable. It was so cool.
Yeah.
I remember that this was the game that everybody went to someone's house to play. This was the one that you had to have. It was very reminiscent of the days when we had, like, say GoldenEye, this was like everybody would crowd around the TV for this one, and this was multiplayer, but it wasn't the multiplayer where it was simultaneous unless we got to the little mini game where you were OG Mario, Mario Brothers, when I want to say 1982 that came out. But anyway, yeah, there was an option in this game in Mario 3 that you could versus your other guy that is second player, and you could go back to that old school, basically, I don't know if you want to say hurt each other, but you know, you're trying to
battle
yeah. each other. Losi, what about you? What memories do you have from this era with this game?
Like you said, very fond. NES was my first console as a kid growing up. And of course, you know, NES was bundled with Super Mario Brothers and the Duck Hunt. So you instantly fell in love with Mario because of that bundled game. And if I have to be really honest, I do remember Super Mario Brothers 2 coming out, right? The North American version coming out and being extremely like disappointed. I never purchased it myself because I remember going to a friend's house playing and being like, this is just, I don't know. I couldn't justify buying it. I couldn't get my mom to, you know, like, no, I really want to play this game, you know? So it didn't happen. And what I remember about this game though, it was super hyped up.
Yeah.
There was tons of commercials. I remember the McDonald's, toys
that
came out. That too. I personally had the one where you would pump and it would the Koopa would jump. They also had the wind up Goomba with the
that's the one I had.
You know? Yeah. And so I think I got caught up in that for sure. I did some research on it. I think it was a $25 million campaign they did in North America for the launch of this game, which is pretty incredible to think that they only the development in US dollars is only around $800,000, to my understanding.
Right.
So they knew they had something great. They had to just really get people excited about it. And they succeeded, I think. And I purchased this game and I don't necessarily remember it being as hard as it is today, but I will say this, you just mentioned it was the battle mode. That was my brother and I's favorite mode to play. We would just turn on this game just to play that. And we would play that for maybe half an hour until one of us got frustrated because the other one was winning too much or something, you know? But that was it. It was that game. And yeah, this game is, like you said, this was it. This is what's, I was trying to think of what I played more. It was either this game or Super Mario Brothers. And I wasn't too sure.
Yeah.
But you couldn't have Super Mario Brothers, like you said, without 3.
What's interesting too, in the history of this, I mean, most gamers know that when we had Super Mario Brothers 2 here in North America, we had what was in Japan, Doki Doki Panic. And Doki Doki Panic was actually, I believe it was a same setting. It was some sort of Arabian story where you're playing someone that is essentially doing the same thing you do in Mario Brothers 2 for the US, but in Japan, it was not Mario characters. And that served as a sort of reshelling, if you will, where they just ended up slapping Mario Brothers characters. And that was Super Mario 2 for us. In Japan, Super Mario 2 was what we know now as Super Mario Brothers 2, The Lost Levels. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if you were to play those two games, Super Mario Brothers Lost Levels and the original, it's almost identically the same game. It looks exactly as far as, you know, the graphics, the music. There wasn't much to offer as a sequel. It wasn't any different other than I think that just small little graphics were changed, very, very minor. And then the music was the same, or the gameplay was more difficult. But we got Super Mario 2 USA. They call it there in Japan, Super Mario Brothers USA. But we had that. And then in that one, we got Princess Peach, you know, doing her little hovering, floating thing. We got Luigi with his little running, you know, floating with his running thing. So each one started getting like a new characteristic as far as fleshing out these characters and getting them new different things to do or power-ups you could if you want to put it to that way. Whereas now Mario 3, things changed significantly. They didn't want to do another reshelling. They didn't want to do you know, anything to make it similar at all to the first two Mario games in Japan. So changing this one significantly was a huge thing. This one took a lot longer. It took a lot more money. It took a lot more memory. And I mean, kilobytes, but still a lot of memory for its time.
My understanding was that 10 times more than the first.
10 times more, right. Yeah. which is just funny to think about. I think that this game had interesting things going for it. We had the power-ups, we had different worlds. Now, if we go to the different worlds,
yeah,
here's a little Super Mario 3 trivia for you guys. How many worlds are in Super Mario Brothers 3, Earl and Losey?
9.
Well, yeah, I was like, that's kind of a trick question, because there's 8 playable worlds, but there's a warp zone as 9. Yeah. Am I getting it right?
Very good. Yeah. There are 8 worlds, and there is a warp zone. Yeah, yep. So you have 8 different worlds, and now this map is, we can see the early stages of what we saw in Super Mario World. You have control over the paths that you take.
Yeah.
Inevitably, you would have to take 1 or 2, no matter what, of the stages to progress further, but you go and then you get to a fortress and then you battle a mini boss. Then you get to then the main castle where you find one of the kings in each of these kingdoms cursed with some sort of curse, and you have to change them back to normal. Then you go onto the Koopa ship.
Yeah.
And then you get the head honcho boss.
It was cool. The king turned into so many different characters. He was a dog, I think, the first one. He turned into like a dinosaur. And that, the boss, or the, it's like a spaceship, it's like a floating what was it, like airship. There was like an anchor, right? It's like airship, but it looked like a big boat, you know. So it was, yeah, they,
which we saw in the Super Mario Brothers movie in the beginning, if you recall, right? That,
yes,
it was cool. I thought that was a really cool addition to the film. This game made history. It made so much change for the Mario games afterward. Like it after this, I could say Mario World and Mario World 2. I mean, all of this progressed with the basis of what we see now in Super Mario Brothers 3. There were a couple of different graphical changes, but with that came a cost of certain things. Like, if anyone remembered, there's a bar on the left side of the screen, typically not noticeable in a CRT TV, but if you put it now on an HD TV, you're going to see this little bar in the background, color of the same color of the background. If anybody ever wondered what that was, it's actually hiding a lot of the graphical glitches and errors on the right side that will bleed over to the other side. So that's to say how much they had to put on this screen on, you know, programming. There was a lot to be put on in each of these stages.
I think that was so clever in their part, because then you don't want to spoil, you know, if an enemy's coming through, right? So they just blocked it off with a bar on the edge, which that was interesting, that I had no idea till recently that was the case. And I thought that was clever for them to actually, to get into that much detail, to have to be like, well, we got to block something out and let's just put a bar over here.
So right.
Yeah,
and most of it would be cropped out by a CRT. It's like you couldn't see it on every TV, but as time progressed with more TVs being larger, you could notice that bar. And I remember seeing it when I was younger. Nowhere near as thick as it looks now if you were to play it on a HD TV or even a 4K. But yeah, so the graphics really took a big turn. What do you guys say about the game regarding gameplay? What would you say? Do you think it became harder than the other ones?
I saw myself getting frustrated recently playing the game, and it's, I don't know if it was just, you know, I'm not such a good gamer, my timing's off, but I feel the game was hard in itself. But I remember playing it and getting through it as a kid, you know, many moons ago. But now we're talking, you know, playing it now, and I'm, you know, you try to just get through the level, but you get caught up, or I was getting caught up in all the, you know, wanting to collect the coins and wanting to find like the secret. There's secrets in the level. If you go through it, you know, you could find a warp hole or whatever, and you want to play the mini games. But it was definitely more challenging now than it was back then, which is weird, but yeah, awkwardly weird, but yeah.
Well, Losey, what do you think? What are your thoughts regarding the gameplay?
Yeah, for me, like Earl said, it was definitely a lot more difficult. Like you mentioned, it was the flying, right? I believe it was World 5, Level 6 is where they had the parabeetles, and they were flying across the screen, and you had to hop on those as they're flying across the screen. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, yeah, the hand-eye coordination, the timing, everything had to be spot on. And if you didn't have certain suits on Mario, it made it that much tougher, right? You kind of had to have that right power-up. And that's kind of what made the game cool, though, is you could have some of those saved right in your back pocket from some of those chests you opened up earlier. Mm-hmm. And so you had to, you know, time them perfectly on when to use them. And yeah, right. Everything was, there's just so much more into it, right? And so you had to time everything perfectly or know it, or of course if you had your Nintendo guide, that always helped. So
yeah, what did we call, a little trivia again, what did we call the magazine made by Nintendo in 1991?
Nintendo Power.
That's right. That's the stuff, man. That stuff was like crack to kids.
Everyone wanted it so bad. It gave you the upper hand, right? It's the cliff notes of your video game, and it had all the details that you needed or all the secret stuff that you just didn't have the time to go through. And the interesting part about, you know, the stages, some stages you followed Mario was in the middle. There's other stages where the screen would scroll and you would either have to catch up or wait for the screen to load. You can't just, you know, just run through the stage, right?
So I hate those levels.
And that's your patience. It's testing you. You're like, okay, now I have to wait for this to happen and wait for it to come to me. And, you know, you don't want to be to the front because, you know, you never know, like there could be the big bullet that just coming through or whatever, you know, you're going to die. But you had to be patient enough to say, okay, here goes the screen. You have to go. The previous Mario's, you know, it would follow Mario. Mario was the center, right? So, you know, you would just run through the stages. It would go back and forth. This one, you would have to wait for the screens to actually, the stage to actually take place. And you have to adapt to that stage if it's going to bring you to a certain area.
There was a lot more like secrets, a lot more timing to get to those secret places. Like I know a lot of it, you had to time when to fly. And if you didn't time it right, then oh, well, you couldn't get to that pipe at the very top somewhere that you would hear in a Nintendo Power magazine that there was a hidden entrance. This game was heavily, heavily reliant on reflexes and reaction time.
Yeah, it was extremely tough. And you just had to know, like you said, unless you had that Nintendo guide, you were playing at your friend's house and they were telling you, right? And you're like, oh shoot, I never knew that. Wait,
you can collect
behind that white block, right?
Yeah. Or you collect the magic whistles that allows you to now go in this warp zone so you could go through any stage you want. Well, not really any stage, but those magic whistles were definitely needed.
I don't know if there were whistles or flutes, but one of the two. Yeah, it would take you to a different world. And I can't remember, and I can't recall when we played it recently. I didn't do it this time around, but I can't remember if it takes you to like the option of different pipes.
It does. Yeah, so there's three whistles or magic flutes in the game. And if you get it, and like I believe it's the first one, you could go to levels 1 through 4. And then if you got it in level, there's another flute, a magic wand, whatever it is, 6 through 7, then you could go through 5 through 8. So the first one's 1 through 4, 5 through 8. And then there's a third one, and you need 2 to go automatically to the 8th stage.
Yeah.
Whichever one. Yeah.
Which was just ridiculously tough. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to play this game. Let's talk about the music. Koji Kondo, he's the guy that made the music. Very renowned Japanese composer. He made a lot. I didn't know how much he was tied to when it comes to the Nintendo games, but he made everything from the Donkey Kong OG arcade all the way up to like new stuff. Like he's still making music now. He just made, most notably that I have my notes here, Breath of the Wild. So he has done everything, and I'm sure he did the latest Zelda as well. So he's done it all as far as the music. It had a very interesting reggae, tropical sort of Caribbean vibe to it. And like each one had a beat. Like you went to the desert hill or desert world, whatever it's called. You had like this cool little beat that went with it. And it was just like, it really got you into the game musically. Like it wasn't just graphics. It was everything. The graphics were top notch, but so was the music. It was up here with, you know, just sort of just good vibe music.
Yeah. And just the sound effects too, right? Getting the star power, and you have that dun, 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 and it just made you want to go play the game even faster. Now you can just run through the stage and not worry about, you know, getting hit or, you know, a monster. Well, not monster, one of the bad guy characters. You can just, you know, knock them off with the star power. And the music is, and in each stage was very addicting. You know, you're just like, okay, cool, like this is, and you hear it now and it triggers a memory in you, and you're like, this
I don't think there's anyone on the face of this world that like has played this game and won't recognize a song. If you played each of these levels, and let's just say maybe you won't recognize it because you didn't play the world or the level, but each game is so catchy with this music. Each stage is so catchy, and the world map, the music is just so recognizable that it's just ingrained in our brain. Like, there's just no way we're ever going to forget what that sounds like. So interesting to note that Miyamoto, he was one of the ones that were responsible for this entire game. He mentioned that Super Mario Brothers 3 was conceived as a stage play. So it was literally like a play on stage, not a stage in a game. But the title screen, as we saw, had a little curtain being lifted. Yeah. If Mario or Luigi, whoever you're playing as, were to complete the level, he would walk off stage. That's why it went dark. Yeah. And he would get the card. I haven't really thought of that. I thought that was really cool that he incorporated something like that. It would be sort of like a play, and there was a lot of bolted backgrounds. So I didn't even notice this until I played it this time around, but these little things that you step on platforms are bolted into the wall. There's shadows casted what would be the sky. I never really realized that. Low seats are right behind you right now, actually, on your wallpaper. Just things that are bolted. There's a shadow on this background. And so it's very interesting now that I can see that, because there's no way I could have noticed that as a kid. I just kind of thought, cool stuff. I don't know what I'm looking at, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. All the eyes on the characters.
Right? All the eyes on the clouds or anything. Yeah.
The hills, the mountains. Yeah. They really put a lot of detail in the maps, and it shows, and it's clever. And again, retro gaming, it's brings you to a special place, you know, when you see all the stuff. But just the whole set with the curtain, the exit stage right, and get your power card. Very awesome.
It gives you a lot of respect for this RD4 team in Japan. I was watching this video, and you know, they're doing this all on just old school graphing paper. And you imagine just having to go through the edits on that type of stuff. And these guys
were sketching everything day and night. They were working hard. It's amazing and a testament to their work when we look back and we're talking about this, you know, 30 plus years later. And it's like, it's still super relevant. It's very nostalgic, but it's very appreciated now as we're, you know, in our adult years. I think as a kid, we probably wouldn't have said the same thing just because it's just a game and it's what it is. But a lot of hard work and a lot of these stories I've heard of the programmers for video games not getting much sleep and traveling and not seeing their families. I mean, it's a big task. I remember too putting in a lot of cheats. My thing with this game too is I really wanted to know what the ending was like. So I ended up putting like Game Genie codes when I started getting a little older, because every time I try to play this stock, I mean, I think the furthest I ever got might have been World 3. Like maybe I saw a little bit of World 3 and that was it. My only regret with this game, and I wish it would have had it, I wish it would have been an option to save.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the big downfalls that I remember. And not only that, though, it was the common NES problem, right? So it's like your game would start fine at first, but 30 minutes to an hour in, it's starting to get pixelated. Oh, shoot. Like, you know, and you said, you couldn't stop it. So you're stuck on trying to finish that game, and it's getting pixelated and distorted. And this game came out at the very end of the NES lifetime. So your NES console had, you know, it was pretty beat in at by that point.
It was getting there. Yeah. I think they already at this point had early stages being worked on for the Super Nintendo. I don't know. Oh, I'm getting rusty with my ears. Either it was about to come out this year or it was the next year. But yeah, the Super Nintendo was right on its way. But man, did they know how to powerhouse for a last hit with a Mario game. This was a huge, huge hit and very, very successful. Here's another little bit of trivia for Mario 3. How many lives does Mario have at the beginning of the game?
You say four? I thought it was five.
It is four.
Four.
Mr. Losi is correct. Ding, nice. Ding.
I'm cheating. Yeah. I have my background.
Oh.
Yeah, you're cheating. It's right back behind you.
With 0 points. There you go.
Four lives. I mean, it's not so generous, and it's this hard of a game. I definitely took advantage of the continues whenever we got them.
Well, like you said, it was two players, right? So if you did just player two and you just did the same, you built on, because that's how the game played. So you technically got eight lives if you did that. It did it that way.
Yeah. Switch the best controller thing was with two player. I think it would have been better with two players.
That's why when it was good when you have those mini games, right? So if you match the three towards the end credits, your power cards, you get five up. So, you know, you really took your time to just run and get the star, just so that you have those extra powers. Because if you didn't match any, you just got one, right? All those extra side games, you know, to get that extra power up or extra one up. And obviously the green mushrooms were always fun to find too. And you don't want to let that drop and fall or lose it, right? You're going after that green mushroom just so that you have that extra life.
Did either of you guys beat this game when you were kids?
I did. I did it by warping to level 8.
Yeah, I think my brother did. So you did, you did. I know I didn't, but I did witness my brother did beat this game. So
if you were to play it on one sitting, I don't know how long this game would take. That would be a lot. You know, that'd be a whole day, if anything, if you even got to the end. I mean, you'd have to be super skilled with all the one-up getting.
Yeah. There on Google, it said the Super Mario Brothers is about 5 hours in length. If you're a gamer that strives to see all aspects of the game, then you're likely to spend around 6 hours to obtain 100% completion. And
yeah,
debatable, I mean, but yeah, it's a long time to, you know, sit in front of a console. But I mean, it's
well, been some nuts. Of those later worlds were just extremely tough. I mean, it was a world 7 was the pipe world, right?
Yeah, the pipe maze, right?
Extremely tough ones. Yeah, and then I would mention 5, 6 earlier was the Parabeetles. There's also that level where you had to run over the Munchers. I think that was in world 6. But those later worlds, man, they got extremely challenging.
Yeah. I'm gonna say that I think this game definitely has a lot in today's standards of being challenging. There's such thing as impossible versus I think what you kept using, Losi, is challenging. I think this game is very hard challenging if you really want to challenge, but I don't think it's impossible. Like, what I appreciated about this NES game, it's actually not impossible if you wanted to play without any cheats. You have to be obviously really good at the game, but then just be smart about your timing when getting stuff like power-ups, things like that. This seems very doable. Like, I think this is the first game I could say that was for NES that wasn't, insanely hard. What would you guys say as far as the future of Mario? I mean, do you think that this kind of game, particularly Mario 3, do you think will directly influence Super Mario Brother Wonder? Like, do you think it's going to have a big part of it? What would you guys say?
My understanding is yes. What I've heard is the developers are trying to mimic a lot of what 3 provided and just try to enhance it. And my understanding is they try to make it even harder. So
yeah. And I, you know, obviously they're adding more and more, you know, they're talking about, right, you know, that one that I saw also where we were watching that documentary where Shigeru Miyamoto, he wanted to have the dinosaur, you know, our Yoshi, right? So we got Yoshi later on,
right?
But that would have been a crazy thing to see in this one. But I think, yeah, each Mario, especially this one, Super Mario Brothers 3, with all the new power-ups and all the suits that you could have Mario wear and have all these cool things that now he could do, you know, if they add more stuff. And I don't know, the raccoon was really the, like, wow, they made Mario fly. And I remember there would be other power-ups, but I just wanted to have the raccoon because he could spin and attack with the tail. He could fly through the stages. I thought it was super clever. You know, it's just like with 1 and 2, when you got the fire and he did the fireball, or, you know, like on 1 and 2, it was cool, but I don't know. I'll take the flying Mario over the fireball, or of course the big mushroom, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think it would have been a little insane or a little too crazy to have Yoshi in this one with all that was going on?
I think that would be awesome. I'm a big Yoshi fan, so definitely.
You're like, bring it on.
I'm like, bring it on. But yeah, I think Yoshi came out in the perfect time, because that would have probably took some of the mystique off of this Super Mario Brothers 3. Instead of Mario having these other power-ups, now you have something that he could ride on. You know, he has another character to use. But yeah,
I think that the I'm trying to remember the power-ups that were in Super Mario World. I'm sure we'll cover that another time, but I can't recall anything outside of the leaf or the feather. Actually, I think it was a feather for the cape, and then fireball. But am I just rusty here? Losi, what do you remember in Mario World? Do you think there were other power-ups as much as this one?
Well, I also remember is all the different colored Yoshis, and that some of the different colored Yoshis kind of different.
They did different things.
Right. The yellow did. Yeah. So I do remember that. Like you said, there was the cape, right? And you could like, I forget what
glide
you call it,
but
you could
like
slide and like bounce off your cape, which was super cool. Yeah, I'm kind of blanking too right now, actually.
I don't think there, that there was
there's
many,
a few I'm missing.
I like on this one. I think that this game had a lot. There was a ton of different suits. Then you had some specials like the look like I think it looked like a little wing with the P on it. Like you could just
you could fly through that
permanently
entire level.
Fly. Yeah. I never knew whether that P was permanent or if it stood for power, one or the other. But yeah, you could take that and you fly through the whole level. I was using the one where that sun was just totally bothering falling. You the whole time. I just flew over him and sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't. But these power-ups were insane.
And I think outside the power-ups too, the fact that Mario can slide down a hill, right? So he had different functions that he could do outside of just jumping and swimming. He could literally glide or slide down this hill.
That's another move. That's right. He could glide down a hill. There was these new moves, moves that we never had before. Like you could fall in the background. So if you crouch long enough, you'd fade into the back.
White block.
The white block, yeah. So there was like these things to do now that were just so intricate. There was like new moves, new there was just so much new stuff.
Well, like you're kind of to go along those lines, like, and I hate to use this word and describing Mario, but he kind of became like way more cute and adorable, right? Like look at him in that suit, right? Like you're like, dude, he just want to like give the guy a hug, right?
Yeah, if you were to do comparisons with the two graphics, Super Mario Brothers 1 and then 3, I mean, huge difference in appearance. And Mario 2 in USA, I mean, it was still, you know, cutesy looking, but not as much as this one. This one was more detailed as far as his face.
You kind of grew attached to the guy in a way. And it was just, it was super fun. And like I said, you were mentioning, anytime you had the ability to slide, guess what? You were sliding. Whether it was backwards or forwards, you were having fun. You'd be like, "Wee!" You know? And
there was different dynamics in the game that were environmental now, too. You had, when you were in the deserts, there was parts where there was quicksand and you start sinking.
That's right.
There was also the ice levels when you start gliding a little bit when you run too fast. That was this game, wasn't it? I believe it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was.
Your flying dynamic. So many environmental things now that you could do and take advantage of. Some of it not taking advantage. It was taking advantage of you. But really cool. Really awesome to look back at that. And the memories to me, my memories with Mario 3 specifically was, I was like you, Losi. It took years until I finally owned it. I kept renting it from a Blockbuster Video where I used to live, and it was just a constant renting. And I hadn't actually thought once while I was a kid to ask my mom to buy it. I just kept renting it because it was the most affordable at the time. And I would sometimes use my money when I did chores, or they would just rent it for me. And but until finally I owned it, then I felt like I'm owning a piece of history at this point in time. It was something so historical and so like, wow, there's so much involved with Mario 3 that you could literally put it next to like Mario World, which was 10 times more advanced as far as graphics and everything, but it was just, it didn't get snubbed. It was still a really cool classic. Even if you had a Super Nintendo, people would still pop on Mario 3 on NES.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, just to clarify and correct you though. No, I did actually buy this game, like I said, kind of quick upon release. And I remember buying this at our local Walmart for sure.
Got it. So you owned it from like day 50, one.
Yeah.
You were the cool kid.
It wasn't day one, but you know, I was the first month or two when it was just hyped, right? Everyone was talking about it. And I was like, yeah, mom, we got to get this game, right?
This is it. Yeah. I'll do my homework.
I got to have three.
Yeah. I'll do
all the chores, all the chores for the rest of the month to get this game.
Homework by myself with no help.
Exactly.
I got good grades. Straight A's, mom.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
So I think that today, I mean, you two guys have kids of your own. Do you think that this is something that you would like to introduce your children to as far as gaming concerned? You know, gaming's and is in terms of, you know, retro gaming, is this something you want to show them and have them experience?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was playing this game last week and my daughter leans over and, you know, I'm on the Switch and she's like, "Dad, can I play?" And I'm trying to show her, but she also got frustrated too because she was like, "It's hard." Like, she goes, "Help me go through the stages." But she's interested. And I think a leading part of that is because of the movie. We watched the movie together. So now, you know, all Super Mario, everything, we went to Universal Studios, went to, you know, do the Super Mario World there. So she's really into it. And when she saw this one being played, she was all in and wanted to get involved with the whole Super Mario thing. So it's right now, it's a huge, they're making a huge comeback. And for us to talk about this on our platform here with retro gaming just shows like what it is now, you know, like all the stuff that's going on with Super Mario and Nintendo. It's really cool to see, and to see the younger kids now appreciate and want to be interested in it, and how this franchise, or this huge franchise, is still being successful even today.
You went to Nintendo World without us?
Yeah.
Jerk.
I know.
Grounded. This whole episode is just calling each other out.
Well, imagine my daughter's face if I told her, hey, I went to Super Nintendo World.
I went with some grown men instead of my children.
No, but we should go. I know we talked about this, and that's something where we should, you know, go and record and actually do a episode for.
That's,
I think,
not a question. That's not a question.
Yeah, it's going down. Yeah,
people keep asking me, by the way, on our program, have you guys done it yet? Like, no, we haven't. But apparently I get to say you have, Earl, so now... Now someone's got an experience on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll no, talk more. To save Earl's butt a little bit and rewind just a tad. Back on your question with my daughter. So actually, super dad moment. This was, so I plugged in the NES Classic in my living room, and it would have been a while since I had plugged it in, but I plugged it in to play this game. And this was the first time I played a video game with my daughter. And,
awesome.
It was super cool, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't even know if you guys can see there. Oh, it's probably good. I'm gonna have to like send you a picture, but it's super cute. And like, yeah, she was super into it, and lo and behold, she was actually sharing and taking turns.
There's not so much you can see on the Zoom call here if you're watching the YouTube, but I know that if you also are just listening to the podcast, there's no way we can do that. But what we can do is post it on our Retro Game Night Instagram, so you can see it on our post there, and you can see Losey playing with his daughter and showing her the ropes with one of the coolest Mario games of all time.
Right. That's a much better solution. There you go.
We definitely, I want to give our ratings, but is there anything else you guys had in thoughts regarding Mario 3? Any other things you wanted to mention about it?
I think we covered, I covered what I needed to talk about.
I just wanted to go back and just pay a lot of homage and respect again. Like we mentioned, to this team, I had no idea just how in depth this really, you know, got into. And like you said, the countless nights, the music composer, I guess, you know, he was at first had nowhere to go. He didn't know what to do, and to see what actually came out of it. Like I don't know. It's like I said, it almost brings some like nostalgia tears to my eyes. 'Cause I'm just like so thankful for those guys. You know, you're little, you just bought it from Walmart and put it in and started playing. Right. You never put appreciation to actually what went into the product. And now as we've gotten older, it's incredible to me. And so, yeah, I'm sure those guys have gotten, I don't know what their ages are now, but they have to look back and be so proud. And I'm sure their kids are too.
Yeah, this is something that was like, as we were mentioning in the earlier part of this episode, that to pay some sort of homage or to talk about is the basis too of this show. And I hope that some of them can see all these different podcasts that are out. But of course, ours is the most important. but if they could see these podcasts and how we talk about it in depth now as adults. And I mean, some of us, you know, older than, you know, even myself, and, you know, we all know how old I am. I'm like almost 100. But these people, you know, they've advanced in age, and it doesn't mean that they can't feel like a kid again when they play this stuff and they collect it. They're worth, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for a reason. This is stuff that has impacted, you know, gaming and pop culture. And yeah, I want to write on this coattail and say that as well, that I really appreciate these makers and the gamers and the programmers that were involved with the countless hours and the sacrifice they had to do. I think it was maybe Super Metroid when it came out, that was practically getting people like sick. Like, it was getting them, like, they were so involved with making this game that it was making some of the programmers just ill, literally. And a lot of them had to be, I believe it was like a whole week's worth, at least at a time, that they were not allowed to leave. Something crazy, like they couldn't leave the corporation there at Nintendo when making this, and they just stayed there in hopes of keeping it in and wouldn't like leak in the news what they were doing. But that's just an example of like the level of sacrifice these guys do, and women involved. And I just really appreciate that. I definitely want to underline that. Hopefully I get to be able to pass on this legacy the correct way and get people to really understand, you know, what gaming has done to people like us.
Yeah.
So as we know, we do here at Retro Game Night, there is a very scientific, super, super cool way of rating our games. We have Showcase, which is something you absolutely love. You put it up literally on a showcase and you want to tell everybody about it and tell how much you love about it. The second option is one and done. You like the time you had with the game, but it's probably just one rental and you're done for the day and you're fine to move on. And then the last would be toilet paper, which, you know, not much to describe there, but it's no good. So with that being said, let's all hear our reviews. I'm sure it's going to be the same exact review, but we can put it into better words. I will start off and say that this game, Super Mario.
Can we add one extra element? If it was also your favorite Super Mario Brothers of all time or not?
This is a good question. Okay, yeah. So let's put that into the ratings too. It won't affect my number. Or not number, sorry, but my rating of what I think of it. But I'm going to say Super Mario Brothers 3 is definitely a showcase. It literally, the longest time, I still have it in storage, but longest time I had a little man cave room and I had my collectibles out. And this was literally a showcase and I still own it in box. It's not sealed by any means, but it's an old box and it's got, you know, the NES cartridge in it and everything. I preserved as best I could. Literally a showcase for me. I used to love showing it off and have people get a nostalgic trip just looking at the box again. To me, this game changed so much. It changed just the dynamic of where Mario was going. It turned into now a cute Mario. It turned,
yeah,
you know, where I think now it paved the way for stuff like Yoshi and more of the, you know, cute characters that we see now that were, you know, inevitably in their own movie. Now we, in 2023, we got, you know, Super Mario Brothers, the movie. So it paved all that. And I will say that this was actually not my favorite Mario game. I would say that that's actually Super Mario World, but this is a very close second for me. I will get into Mario World when we get there, but I have my own reasons for that. Mario 3 to me was just the best game you could get on the NES, and that to me is still said to many gamers that I talk to. Earl, how about you? Let's go to your rating and why.
I totally wanted to go against you, but you really kind of hit the nail right there. I'm also showcased just because of everything that this game plateaued for the franchise, you know, with the whole suits. And I think, you know, the way this game is, even though it was hard, I would still have it as a showcase and would want to play it and share it with, you know, my daughters. And yeah, I think it's such a cool, you know, there's certain things that turn a franchise around or whatever. I know, well, Super Mario 1, it's, you know, it's the OG, it's the classic, which is really great too. But if we're talking my all-time favorite, and just because I said it earlier, you know, Yoshi is what was pretty cool. Super Mario World would be my favorite. This would, if we're ranking them, Super Mario 1, the OG one, Nintendo would be number 2, and then this one would be 3rd, just if that's where it is. But it is a showcase. We do all these really cool and great games that have just a personal, like, nostalgic feel that you have a connection to. So for me, this one is a showcase, but if we're ranking it, this will be number 3. Super Mario World would be 1, OG Super Mario, and then Super Mario 3. This is where this would fall.
Well said. Losey, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's pretty easy, I feel like, right? It's hard to argue as this one not being a showcase. As you mentioned, this is probably the greatest title in NES's library. And not only that, it paved the way for so much more. Whether it's my favorite of all time. Now, This is extremely tough because, yeah, I was going between this one and Super Mario Brothers World. Super Mario World. And again, though, when we started talking about the battle mode, I look back and I think I played that more than anything else in my life. I swear to God, with my brother, we would play that so much. And just for that reason, I'm going to give this one, yeah, my favorite of all time, just because it what that meant to me and yeah, everything else. So I'll put this number one, Super Mario World number two. And actually, I like Odyssey a lot. And that would be my third.
Fair enough. I haven't played through that one yet.
Yeah, but with three being my favorite, I can't, again, with Wonder coming out soon, I'm pre-ordering. I'm excited. You boys better come over, bring over a six pack.
Yeah. Is there any other way to do it? We're talking six pack of like Kool-Aid, right?
Yeah.
And popsicles and junk food.
Red Bulls and what was those Balls energy drinks? Do they still sell those? God.
They still make that stuff?
I don't know. I hope so.
The Orbits.
Right. Well, we definitely want to hear more of you guys, what you have to say. I will, and I promise, it's not an empty promise. I'm going to start reading some of our messages we get on social media. I fail to do that. I fail as a host, guys. I truly fail. Oh, I have too much in you. No,
you got your back. Don't worry.
I'm definitely going to start reading some of your guys'. You know, I've gotten a few comments and emails even for our stuff in the past, and appreciate that, you guys out there. Thank you for following us and liking our posts. Talk to us about Mario 3. If I miss anything, or if there's anything you guys wanted to talk and share about your memories, you can always do so. But in order to do that, you have to find us. So Losi, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, Michael_Losi. Just had a trip in Catalina last weekend. So that's usually what you'll find me doing. It's just traveling, eating, and enjoying family time.
That's what I call having fun. Awesome. Mr. Lawrence, where can people find you?
You guys can find me on Instagram. Hey, Earl Lawrence is my handle.
He's sailing.
Yeah, that's all you do is you just sail the seven seas. There's no time for retro gaming when you're out there. You bring a Game Boy?
Well, you could.
You could. But yeah. But you don't.
I mean, when you're on the water. Yeah.
You can find me at Damian_DiCarlo, Retro_Game Night on Instagram, collectively, RetroGameNightPodcast.com. Hit a subscribe, hit a like, talk to us. Till next time, everybody, keep calm and game on. Good night, everybody.